Les conférences du Collège de France.
It's a great pleasure to have Takeo Oshii visiting Collège de France and lecturing for us on the Japanese economy. Takeo Oshii is a professor at the Tokyo University and Tokyo College. He has published numerous papers and won a number of awards, in particular the Nakahara Prize in 2005 from the Japanese Economic Association, which is equivalent of the Clark Medal for Japan. So he's really a top economist in Japan and worldwide. We met with Takeo, in fact, a long time ago. Doesn't make us look any younger. You defended your PhD at MIT in 1988, and that was my first year there as an assistant professor. So and you took classes with Peter Howitt.
Well, yes,
was visiting for a year in 1987-88. And we met then, but we also had very common friends because you co-authored with David Sharfstein, and I used to have lunch with Patrick Bolton and David Sharfstein regularly, and I'm sure we had numerous lunch at the time. So Takeo's research focuses on banking, corporate finance, and the Japanese economy. And Takeo is best known for his work on Japan's financial system, particularly the banking crisis of the 1990s and the broader structural issues in in Japanese economy. In particular, Takeo's research tries to explain why Japan's financial system, once a driver of growth, became an obstacle to growth, particularly after the bubble burst in the 1990s, and how weak banks and poor governance prolonged stagnation, and the old bad loans problem in Japan. So, you know, Japan is known, you know, you had a bad loan problem and you had to restructure the bad loan problem. You see, when banks are overloaded with bad loans, they tend to be soft on firms because they don't want to reveal the extent of the bad loan problem. So when you are overloaded with bad loans as a bank, you tend to be soft budget constraint on firms, and which is not, you are not encouraging the best innovators, and you tend to keep zombie firms because you don't want to reveal the extent of the bad loan problems. And another problem in Japan is that Japan has been a fast-growing economy between World War II and the 90s, and then, you know, growth slowed down in Japan. And you link, you know, the banking problem and the growth slowdown in Japan. Okay, so I think it'd be a pleasure. I don't want to detail, you know, your big contributions, banking crisis and zombie firms with Anil Kashyap, and or the corporate governance and financial systems or monetary and fiscal policy in Japan. And you have numerous papers and books with Anil, and also joint papers with David, and papers and lots of papers that you produced. But really, if you are interested, there is so much to learn about the banking crisis in Japan and the growth slowdown in Japan. And Takeo's name is absolutely incontournable, as we say in French. It bears lessons for us. We are going through a sub budget constraint problem. You know. Post-COVID, for example, we could not get out of the whatever it takes. So France faced a sub-budget constraint problem, and we tried to learn from what you did in Japan to try to get out of this sub-budget constraint. So you will be giving how many this and next week lecture?
That's right.
Exactly. And so I don't want to take more. So the idea is that you would speak for something like 50 minutes, and then maybe we leave 10, 15 minutes for questions. And it's a pleasure. It's a great privilege to have you, Takeo, with us. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Philip, for a kind introduction. So let me move to the podium and start my talk. Okay. Je m'appelle Takeo Oshii, professor d'économie et directeur du Tokyo College à l'Université de Tokyo. Je remercie le professeur Philippe Aguillon de m'avoir invité au Collège de France. C'est pour moi un honneur de donner une conférence au Collège de France, une institution renommée que nous admirons à l'Université de Tokyo. Nous avons créé Tokyo College, l'Université de Tokyo, il y a 7 ans, pour développer la recherche de pointe et partager ce savoir avec toute la société. Je voudrais continuer en français, mais je ne parle pas français. Permettez-moi de continuer en anglais. So allow me to switch to English. And today and Wednesday next week, I will discuss the Japanese economy here. So I start with my first slide, lectures on the Japanese economy. And today I will talk about rapid growth and long stagnation in Japan. And then in the next week, I pick up one particular challenge the Japanese economy has, or Japan is facing, the demographic challenges, and talk about how important it is, or how serious it is, or what can they do, or can we do, to get around the problem of demographic challenges. And discussion today and next week will be largely based on the textbook on the Japanese economy that I wrote with Takatoshi Ito. And there's an English version, which was published in 2020, followed by the Japanese version and the Chinese version. We haven't had a French version yet, and I'm not sure if we have one. But if you speak, if you read English or Japanese or Chinese, you can get your favorite one. Okay, and I want to start by also spending 1 minute talking about my co-author of this textbook, Takatoshi Ito, who just passed away last month, and he was a great Japanese economist. He started out as a theorist working on disequilibrium theory, but soon started to do more empirical research on macroeconomics and international economics, focusing especially on the Japanese economy. He wrote the first edition of The Japanese Economy by himself in 1991. And I joined him like mid-2000. It took us more than 10 years to revise his first edition and come up with the second edition. And the second edition, as I said, was published in 2020. So it took us more than 10 years. And we were talking about finishing the third edition within a decade, but it's now impossible to do that together. Although I hope I will have a third edition with some other authors in the near future. And the one thing we emphasize in this textbook on the Japanese economy is that the mainstream economics that we studied and many of you studied is sufficient to, or is I guess almost sufficient to understand the Japanese economy, which some people think are quite different from Western economies. And at least that was the major approach 30 years ago. Many people think the Japanese economy was different and usual economics doesn't apply to the Japanese economy, but it's not the case. We can use the standard economics to understand the experience of Japan, the Japanese economy. So today, and also next week, you don't need any special knowledge about Japan to understand the Japanese economy. Okay. If you know something about Japan, it's better, but you don't have to. Okay. And some economics knowledge will be helpful, even though I will try to speak in I try to avoid jargon in economics so that people who don't have a deep knowledge in economics can understand what we are talking about. Okay. So we will try to understand why the Japanese economy used to grow very rapidly. The relatively old people in this audience remember the time when the Japanese economy was growing rapidly. Young people may not know, but the Japanese economy used to do very well. And we want to discuss why it stopped growing at one point. Philippe mentioned the speculative bubbles and the collapse and the banking crisis. And that was when the Japanese economy stopped growing, and why it took 20 years, 30 years from then for Japan to get out of stagnation. So here we go. Okay. So this graph, taken from my textbook with Taka Ito, figure 3.2, it gives us a quick overview of the Japanese economy in the last 60 years or so, starting with 1955. And we can find roughly three periods, okay, showed by the average growth rate of represented by a green horizontal lines from 1955 to around 1973 or 4. The Japanese economy grew very rapidly, about 9% a year. This is a growth rate, annual growth rate of the real GDP. And then after the mid-1970s, the growth rate dropped to about 4%. It's still high, and the Japanese economy continued to grow at 4% or so until the end of 1980s. Then it stopped growing. The average growth rate since then, from 1990 to early 2000, or early 2010, were roughly zero, or maybe 1%. Okay. So we want to understand why Japanese economy first was able to grow so rapidly in 1950s and 1960s, why it stopped growing in 1990, or in early 1990s, and then continued to grow only very slowly since 1990s. So this is the outline of today's lecture. So why Japan grew rapidly, so rapidly from 1950s to 1970s, why Japan stopped growing in the 1990s, and we now talk about the lost decades for Japan. Okay? And I will clarify what we mean or what we should mean by lost. What were lost during the lost decades? And then I will talk about why have the lost decades lasted well for decades, okay, for a long time. And then I want to end this lecture with a hopeful note by saying or by answering yes to this question: have the lost decades finally ended? Okay, and I gave an answer already, but I will answer yes to the last question. Okay, so let's start with growth period of 1950s and 1960s. So why Japan grew so rapidly in the 1950s and 1970s? And in one sentence, the key is that Japan was able to grow so rapidly because Japan started from the very low level of economic output, or low level of GDP. Okay, and Japan was trying to catch up with more advanced economies in the immediate post-war period. We're talking about 1940s, 50s, and 60s, and eventually succeeded in catching up. And if you start behind the more advanced economy, there are some advantages, and Japan was able to take those advantages. Okay. As I will try to explain a little bit more, starting with a lower level of output helps because at the lower level of output, the marginal product or the marginal return from the investment is higher. I will try to explain that a little bit more. And then having a lower level of technology helps in the sense that you can get more advanced technology easily than, say, compared with a situation where you have to come up with your own technology from scratch. You can imitate more advanced technology, or you can import technology from more advanced countries. So those are the two things that Japan did very successfully. I wouldn't say these are the easy thing to do in order to imitate the more advanced technology. The economy or the people in the economy need to have some technological level and to learn from more advanced technology. Financing the investment to increase the capital takes some economic structure, some economic institutions to do. So I'm not saying it's easy. This is an easy job, but Japan did successfully, and Japan had an advantage that they started from the low level of output. So that's a basic story. Okay. And in understanding the economic growth, there are several ways we use in economics to understand the economic growth of any country, including Japan. But one approach we take is a so-called growth accounting approach. And the growth accounting approach starts with an assumption of a production function, which may sound hard, difficult, but production function basically means there are some inputs you can use to produce output. Okay. So we write down an equation like this, y is equal to a, f, k, l, and in a nutshell, this really means you have two inputs, capital and labor, and combining those capital and labor under the certain state of technology A, you get output Y. So that's what this function says. Okay, and usually in growth accounting, we make some standard assumptions, including constant returns to scales, which mean if you double all the inputs, if you double the capital and double the labor at the same time, you double the output. It seems to be a sensible assumption. You increase all the inputs by the same amount or the same ratio, same rate, you increase the output by the same rate. So that's constant returns to scale. And another assumption we usually make is the for one input, okay, the marginal productivity diminishes as the level of that input increases. Okay. So in terms of the graph, we assume something like this. So on the left-hand side, we show a relation between capital and output. Both of those are divided by labor. So we are taking labor as a given. And in that situation, when we increase the capital a little bit, okay, you increase the output a little bit. But the degree of increase in output when we increase the capital declines as we accumulate the capital. Okay, so I guess there are many examples people use, like if you have only one, or only, say, a limited number of people, okay, the first tool is very productive. The second tool is somewhat less productive. And if you have many tools, if you give many tools to the number of people without increasing the number of people, eventually the marginal contribution of the additional tool becomes zero. Okay, so that's a marginal level. That's an assumption of a diminishing marginal productivity, and for a given level of labor, the marginal product of a capital declines as the level of capital increases. Okay. So, and this has an important implication, that is, if the economy starts with a low level of capital, the marginal productivity of that capital is high, but as the economy grows over time and the capital accumulates, then the growth rate of the economy starts to decline because of the declining marginal productivity, diminishing marginal productivity. Okay. So if you compare, say, two countries with the same level of technology, the smaller country tend to grow more rapidly because they have a small amount of capital, and additional capital becomes more productive. Okay, so that's an important assumption that we make in the traditional growth theory. And it turns out that this applies to the Japanese economy, or that this fits the experience of the Japanese economy very well. Okay, so coming back to the growth accounting, so if we consider output is produced by capital, labor, and the state of technology, then it turns out we can decompose the growth rate of an economy into three parts. The contribution of capital, which is the first term in the right-hand side of this equation, and the contribution of labor, and the contribution of technology, which we call technological progress. Okay. So if we consider two inputs, capital and labor, and the level of technology, the state of the technology, which influences the total productivity, then we can decompose the economic growth rate into three parts. We can fully explain the economic growth by three factors: contribution of capital, contribution of labor, and contribution of technology, which we call technological progress. Okay? And I don't get into the details, but it turns out you need to, in order to calculate, say, contribution of capital, we need to multiply the growth rate of capital by the, in a sense, importance of that capital, which is given by the share of capital income in the total income. Okay. And the same thing for the labor. We multiply the growth rate of labor by share of labor income. And this is an equation we get. And we can use the actual data to decompose the economic growth rate into three parts. And many people did this type of calculation. And here we show the numbers from our textbook. And the original source of these numbers was a paper done by Edward Dennison and William Chan in 1976, long time ago. Okay. And so each country, Japan and the U.S., from 50s to 70s, roughly. Okay. This shows the total growth rate, annual average growth rate, and how much of those were explained by the contribution of capital, contribution of labor, and the contribution of technology. Okay. And we can make, and numbers are in the parentheses, the proportion of the total growth that each factor can explain. And there are a number of observations we can make. For example, if we compare Japan and the US, Japan has a higher contribution of capital. Okay. So that fits the idea of diminishing marginal returns of capital, the Japan started smaller, so the impact of one additional capital was much bigger for Japan. So capital was much more important for Japan. And also we find, actually for both countries, very high contribution of technological progress, and especially for Japan. So during this time of a rapid economic growth, Japan grew by 9% on average per year, and over half of that it was explained by technological progress. And labor also contributed too, but the contribution of labor wasn't that high compared with the U.S. economy. Okay, comparable to the U.S. economy. So 1.85% for Japan and 1.3% for the U.S. And here, labor includes not only the number of people, but also the quality of the people. They try to estimate the quality improvement of the labor by looking at the education level and so on. Okay, so the human capital accumulation is something they try to measure in labor. It's not just the number of workers. Okay. So let me skip this or let me talk about this. Okay. So what is this graph? This shows first we need to smooth out the data. But after smoothing out the data, we can calculate the level of the economy and the growth rate of the economy at that point. So we are talking about the trend, not ignoring the short-term fluctuation. And the point of this graph is that Japan wasn't that exceptional. Okay? Japan was similar to France, Germany, and Italy. All of those started at a lower level of output compared with the US and recorded a very high growth rate in 50s and actually this is 70s, growth rate in 70s and early 80s. Okay. Then as they continued to grow, the growth rate started to decline. Okay. And that applies to Japan and Germany and France as well. Okay. So the diminishing marginal returns, the diminishing marginal products of capital seems to apply to these growth experiences. Okay. So Japan grew rapidly because they were able to take advantage of the catch-up economy. So Japan's economic growth was basically the catch-up growth. And why Japan stopped growing in the 1990s? Okay. And Japan stopped growing and they entered a long period of stagnation. And here, what I want to stress is structural explanation or the supply side explanation rather than the demand side explanation, which some people uses because the speculative bubble collapsed and which cooled down the Japanese economy from demand side and started the recession. But that simple story cannot explain the long-lasting nature of the recession or the long-lasting nature of the stagnation in Japan, and we have to look at the supply side. And I don't get into the details, but I should say that Japan's strategy for catching up, that is, the trying to innovate or trying to imitate the more advanced economies and importing the new technology and to do better and hopefully by selling to the rest of the world more export-oriented growth all of those models which fit, which worked well for the Japan during the catch-up phase, stopped working as the Japanese economy came close to the frontier of technology. So now, instead of relying on the technologies developed in foreign countries or more advanced countries, Japan had to come up with their own innovation, which was, of course, harder than just imitating the existing technology. And also, Japan should have learned to depend more on or less on foreign demand, but Japan never did. So, and also in order to foster the innovation to come up with the new technology, Japan needed to deregulate some of the rigid system, but that didn't happen. And in addition to those, as we will talk about today and also in next week's lecture, Japan also suffered from demographic challenges. So for all of those reasons, Japan stopped growing in the 1990s. So this shows real GDP for Japan in log scale. So if the economy is growing at a constant rate, this would be straight line. And the blue line is what actually happened. And we can clearly see a kink of the curve. So the slope of the blue line dropped after 1990. Okay. And the red line, the red dotted line shows, is a trend growth rate from 1980 to 1996. And extrapolated that. So if Japan continued to grow, or had continued to grow at the pace of the growth from 80 to 1996, then Japan would have grown along the dotted line, which didn't happen. Okay. So this shows clearly the trend growth rate changed, and this doesn't look like something caused by a demand shortage, because if it was only demand that dropped, okay, then and the supply was okay, then we would have observed the gap between demand side and the supply side continue to grow. And what we would have observed is ever decreasing price level or the deflation spiral instead of just a deflation which Japan experienced. So in addition to the demand shock, Japan should have suffered from the supply side shock or supply side problem as well. And one structural factor that is often pointed out for Japan is a demography. That Japan used to be a young country in 1970s or so. Japan was the youngest countries among the matured economies. Okay. And Japan aged quickly. So the Japanese, Japanese average life length of the Japanese started to grow very rapidly, which is a good thing. But people continued to retire at the same age. So that meant the retiree started to increase. And also at the same time, the fertility rate started to decline for Japan. So Japan suffered from aging, and in the end, the lower fertility rate started to dominate the lengthening of the life, and the Japanese population started to shrink after mid-2000s. So many people point out this is a very this is an important structural change. The population, the demography in Japan started to change, and that limit the growth of the Japanese economy. Okay. So we will talk more about this in the next week lecture, but let's look at what really was an important, how much the demographic factor, how much important the demographic factor was for the Japanese economy. And to do that, I will report another type of decomposition of the growth rate, which is based on a simple identity that is shown on the first line of this graph. That is, output is equal to output divided by the amount of labor, multiplied by labor, divided by population, and multiplied by population. Okay, so we multiply and divide by the same thing, the population and labor twice, labor, and you get to the same thing. So this is just a simple, it's not even math, right? It's a simple arithmetic, okay? But in this can be interpreted as saying output is a population times participation rate, how much of the population works, and the productivity. What is the output per worker, output per labor? Okay. And once we wrote down this equation, and then we can write down another equation, which is in terms of the growth rate instead of the level. So in the level, the population participation rate and productivities are multiplied to get the output. Okay. In terms of the growth rate, that means the growth rate of output is the sum of population growth rate of participation rate, and the productivity growth. Okay. And we can call the first two, population growth and the growth of participation rate, the growth of the number of people who are working compared with the total population, those two things as a demographic factors. Okay. So by using this type of equation, or this equation, we can decompose the economic growth into demographic factors and the productivity growth. Okay. And the population decline, and also the decline of participation rate, maybe due to aging, that many people, more people get old and they retired. Those two demographic factors certainly reduces economic growth. Okay. And the question is how much? We can use this equation to see how much the demographic factor was important for Japanese economic growth and also the stagnation. And this is the result. Okay. So for each decade from 1955 to 2024, okay, we do that calculation and decompose the economic growth rate into three parts. The economic growth coming from population growth, the more people there and they can produce more. And the participation rate growth, the more people of the population work, so they can contribute to the output. And productivity growth. That each worker produces more. Okay. Then the green part, the participation rate, and the red part of population growth are together called demographic factors. Okay. And what we can see from this graph is during the rapid economic growth period, the demographic factors contributed about 1%. Okay. So out of 9% growth rate, demographic factors can explain 1%. Okay. And that 1% by 2000s declined to almost zero. the last part, 2015 to 2024, we see a green line suddenly becomes positive. And that really shows is now old people started to walk more, which happened in the last 10 years. And also women, which wasn't fully used in the Japanese economy, are now walking more, now having more career in the job market. So the green part contributes to the economic growth. But the demographic factors declined from 1% to 0%. So that's not good. But what is more important has been the decline of productivity growth, the blue part. Okay? Productivity used to grow at 8%, 7%, and that declined to 3% or so, and to 1% or sometimes 0%, okay, or negative at the end. Okay. So what we can see from this decomposition is that demographic factors can explain, or of course the demographic factors are important, but in terms of magnitude, the demographic factors explain only about 1% of economic growth during the rapid economic growth period, and the demographic factors explain only around 1% of economic growth slowdown. Okay. So a more important factor has been productivity growth. So even though Japan faces an important demographic challenges and the demographic factors reduce the economic growth rate for Japan, Japan cannot really blame demographic factors alone. The productivity growth or the decline of productivity growth was more important. Okay. So natural question is, what reduced the productivity growth? Okay. And there can be several reasons, but the one reason I want to focus today is a lack of economic restructuring. Okay. And what I mean by economic restructuring, okay, but before I do that, let me just say one word for what was lost during the lost decades. Okay. So as we can see from the, let me just read this. Okay. So economic growth slowed down, but the level of output did not decline, even during the so-called lost decades. So this is what I want to emphasize here today, except for some severe recession. And the quality of life in Japan has been maintained overall during the lost three decades. So when people were talking about the lost decades in Japan, some of you visited Japan and found out Japanese economy looked okay. And I guess that's the case. So what Japan lost in that sense was not the economic prosperity or the level of the output, but what is lost is more about the opportunity to do better. So Japanese economy, even during the lost three decades, did okay. But Japan could have done better. Okay, so that's my interpretation of the lost decade. So Japan didn't lose, but Japan could have done more. So in that sense, what is lost was the opportunity to do better during the three decades. So let's come back to the question of what reduced the productivity growth. Okay, well, what were the factors? Okay. And we can talk about the relative importance of aggregate demand and aggregate supply, but here I want to focus on the economic restructuring. And the economic restructuring is also known as creative destruction, which Philippe has emphasized as an important factor for many economic growth in many regions. And this is where the Japanese economy got into trouble. There was too few economic restructuring or too few creative destruction. And this is related to the zombie problems that Philip mentioned a little bit. Okay, so the zombie firms are those firms which are not productive or profitable and should exit the market if the market functions efficiently, but nonetheless kept alive by, helped by their creditors like banks, or maybe by the government. So they were allowed to go on. Okay. So in this sense, this is related to the soft budget constraint problem as well. And those zombie firms, what the zombie firms does is to slow down the natural process of economic restructuring or creative destruction, and by continuing to do business in the market, they not only absorb the resources that they shouldn't be using, but also reduces the profitability of potential new entrants who would have a higher productivity growth, and depresses the productivity growth overall. And we can see this, or we can measure the extent of the creative destruction or the lack of creative destruction by looking at another decomposition, this time is a decomposition of productivity growth. Okay, and here I'm running out of time, so I don't go into the equations, but if you trust me, the change in productivity or economic growth of an economy or industry can be decomposed into four parts. Okay. So the first part is called within effect. Okay. Each production unit, say firm or factory, becomes more productive. Okay. So it's easy to see, right? The overall productivity of an economy is a weighted average of the productivity of individual production units. Okay. So if each production unit becomes more productive, whole economy becomes more productive. So it's easy to see, right? That's within effect. The second one is a reallocation effect among incumbents or existing firms. Okay. So if relatively more productive production units become larger and relatively less productive units become smaller, then overall productivity increases. Okay. So that's called reallocation effect. Okay. If productive companies become bigger and less productive companies become smaller, then overall productivity goes up. Now, more extremely, there are entry effects and exit effect. That is, if more productive firms or more productive production units start new, okay, come into the market, enter the market, then it pushes up the overall productivity. Okay. And in the similar way, if less productive production units go out of market or disappear, by disappearing, they contribute to the overall productivity of the remaining production units. Okay. So that's called exit effect. So we can decompose the overall productivity growth into these four parts. Each one becomes more productive, or productive production units become bigger, or new, more productive production units comes in, or less productive units go out of business. Okay. So when we decompose the Japanese economic growth or the productivity growth into these four. Okay. So this is back from the 1980s and 1990s, and they look at, and the number is from the study by Kyoji Fukao and his group. But we can decompose the total factor productivity growth or the labor productivity growth into these four parts. And the one thing I want to stress here is here, this one. The exit effect turns out to be negative if you do this calculation for Japan. Okay. And so exit effect is the effect of production units go out of business, and what does it do to the overall productivity. Okay. So what this says is when the companies exit, okay, that they have a negative effect on the overall productivity. Okay. So when the companies exit the market, the remaining companies, or remaining production units, show lower level of productivity. So what does this mean? And there are some recent numbers which shows a negative exit effect too. So what does this mean? So the negative exit effect suggests those companies or those production units which are exiting have higher productivity than the production units that survive on average. Okay. Or, in other words, the many production units that survive have lower than average productivity. Okay. So that sounds wrong. Okay. So less productive companies survive, and the relatively more productive companies go out of business. Okay. So this is consistent with the zombie problems, the low productivity firms who can get some help from somewhere for some reason survive, and relatively a little bit more productive firms cannot survive. Okay. So the quality of exits in Japan have some problems. Okay. So that is an important part of the lost decade, that there was a lack of productivity growth, and some of those come from the lack of restructuring. And one easy way to see the lack of economic restructuring is to look at the negative exit effect. Okay. So I'm running out of my time. I just gave you the answer to this last question: have the lost decades ended? Okay. And the answer is yes. Okay. We can look at some numbers. Output gap, which shows how much the economy is close to the potential level of output, has been shrinking. Okay. And this is easier to see. In the stagnation period, Japan had suffered from deflation. The price level has been falling. Now Japan has been experiencing inflation for the last 3 years or so, similar to other advanced economies. Okay. And labor market has been tight. Unemployment rate was very low, even during the COVID. And another measure, job offers to job applicants rate has been high. The wages, even though they have been stagnant for many years, started to increase finally. And the stock market is rallying, which is consistent with the good economic performance. So not necessarily the same. So I would say that Japan is finally out of stagnation, which lasted 30 years. So just to summing up, why Japan grew rapidly, that was a catch-up economic growth, which ended around 1970s or so. Initially, the speculative bubbles was able to hide the extent of the problem, but it couldn't, until it couldn't. And Japan stopped growing because Japan wasn't able to move from a catch-up economy to a more advanced economy where the creative destruction is more important. Okay. And the lost decades means that, you know, even the lost decade, Japan did okay, but could have done better.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.